and that's the whole thing. One last time, go visit our webpage at umfm.com. There's a big banner there. Click it. It'll give you all the information. We are more than happy to talk your ear off. You can see where all the funds and the proceeds go. You can see how it works towards our programming, and you can see a list of all the incentives, because there's just far too many to list. We also have pictures of everything that's there, so you can kind of see all the bennies and the goodies that we have here. And it's a great time. So we hope you can donate here to campus and community radio, where schmucks like me can go on and actually, you know, share a little bit of our joy and a little piece of the world that we enjoy so much. And in my case, swing music and dance and all of that that entails, because we have our own little community there as well. All right, let's keep on going with some more music. Up next, where was I? On my list, we've got classic piece. This is Benny Goodman and his orchestra featuring Jimmy Rushing with He Ain't Got Rhythm, 1937, here on Swing Radio.
Street Jazz for Sunday nights.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to 52nd Street, Winnipeg's home of classic jazz. My name is Jay. For the next hour, I'll be your host right here on 101.5 UMFM. We're going to do just a bit of a birthday tribute tonight. Tonight is the end of April. I have no idea what date it is, but the important part is this. April 29th will mark the 127th birthday of Duke Ellington. It's a random number. I appreciate that. And actually, I've been doing this show long enough to tell you that we celebrated other anniversaries before. So tonight we're going to do a little tribute to Duke Ellington and play some of the songs that he's known for and made him famous and characterized his career. And we started off tonight with a song that's actually, believe it or not, the latest from a date that we will play tonight, which is to say that that song was recorded in 1963. The song is called Money Jungle, and it's a title track off of an album that Duke Ellington did along with Max Roach on drums and Charles Mingus on bass. And it's quite interesting because it really straddles sort of a lot of that Ellington sound in terms of some of the things that we think about from the swing era. And Charles Mingus with that very avant-garde bass style, as well as Max Roach playing some very interesting drums all the way through that. Now, contemporaneous to Duke Ellington's birthday, it's also a time for us to look to all of you out there who are listening and express our thanks for your listenership, thanks for your support of the station for many, many years. And as we enter 2026, it's our 28th year on the air. And believe it or not, I've been here for them all, which is deeply concerning for me. But we're going to talk more about the station and less about me. Tonight is Pledgerama, and it's the opportunity that we have every year to turn to you, our listeners, our supporters, to say, hey, we're wondering if you can help us. And what we're trying to find out is whether or not you can help us reach our goal of $34,000 this year. Now, Pledgerama is really for the idea. This isn't for salaries. This isn't for funding for programs. I don't get paid at all for this. But it represents 15% of our operating budget. And really, this is about money that's going to go towards capital and investments in the radio station and give an opportunity for people much younger than me and much more talented than me to be able to have a show on the air and be able to express to their community things that are important to them, whether that's musically, looking at this generation of music, whether that's artistically, whether that's from a news perspective, whether that's from a political perspective. And over the years, over the many, many years that we've been on the air, I like to think of it as not really that many, but over the many years that we've been on the air, we've had the opportunity to see so many people grow and develop here. And you know, the reality is simply this. We don't need people to go out and become radio disc jockeys. If that's what they want to do, that's great, and this is a great training ground for them. But it's also a great training ground for communication, for building self-confidence and self-esteem, for young people to be able to find a way to communicate with one another, share values and share interests, and keep our artistic community alive. Nothing supports local art scenes like campus and community radio. And we are fortunate to live in a city where there are more than one. It's more than one campus community radio station. But the University of Manitoba represents a student body of over 25,000 students, and with over 28 years of experience has had a long and successful series of partnerships with a number of community organizations, from jazz festivals and folk festivals to local breweries and shows that have come through town, independent shows and otherwise. And so tonight we're asking you to help us continue on the air, raising some money for capital projects, infrastructure needs, fixed costs, and so forth. Now, if you donate to us, you have two choices. Number one is you get a tax return. And because it's the end of April, it's a good time to think about next year's taxes. And if you're like me, you'll remember to donate more money this year. But if you choose, or you've already paid your taxes, or you don't have to pay taxes because you're generous, then the other option is that you can look at our Pledgerama incentive levels. At $25, you get the buttons, you get a magnet, and you get some enameled pins. At the $50 level, buttons, stickers, a magnet, enamel pins, and a coffee mug, plus a one entry into our daily Big Sun Festival draw, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. $75 level, all of those things, plus a daily entry into the Sukums draw and a 2026 UMFM pledge t-shirt. If you hit the $101.50 mark, you can get all of those things. You get the stickers, you get the magnet, you get the pins, you get the mugs, you get the t-shirt and or a tumbler, and our fantastic and now legendary Festival Express draw. At the $150 level, the numbers just keep going up because you get a chance to get into, you get all of those things, plus a chance to get into our golden guest list. And finally, and this is the one that everyone's been waiting for, the $250 level, a mere $21 a month, you can have the chance to have the buttons, the stickers, two magnets, one for each fridge, two UMFM enamel pins, one for you and one for your significant other, if that's what you choose, two UMFM coffee mugs, two UMFM pledge t-shirts, a UMFM tumbler, a long sleeve UMFM shirt, and a brand new UMFM hoodie, as well as daily draws into our golden guest list draw. And finally, any donation above $250 receives all of that and a UMFM Bluetooth speaker. So the list just keeps on growing. We're going to talk about some of these other things later through the show, but let's talk a little bit about Duke Ellington. Born Edward Kennedy Ellington, April 29th, 1899. He's born in Washington, D.C. He was actually born into a middle-class African-American family. His father was a butler to a very prominent physician, and his mother was a high school graduate. And both of them actually were amateur musicians. So he grew up in relative affluence, at least certainly for the time. He taught him good manners. His father taught him good manners and diplomacy, but both of his parents taught him piano. And he showed artistic talent, and actually at the young age, sort of this famous stories about how he had the possibility of doing an art school scholarship, etc. And instead, he turned to music. In 1923, he moved to New York. He got a gig at the Kentucky Club, and then finally in 1927, the legendary Cotton Club. And it was with this band that he began to record for the very first time. So if we're going to go back to 1927, one of the very first recordings of Duke Ellington. It's Duke Ellington and his Washingtonians. And we're going to hear them with a song called East St. Louis Todolo. Now, you will be listening to this and saying, what is that sound? And that sound is a very special one. It's Barbara Miley, who is playing the muted trumpet using a plunger. He was one of the early stars in the Ellington Band. But this is a band that played together for a couple of years. So by the time they get in the studio, it's a band that is tight. The orchestration is sophisticated. And there's some exotic sounds, what they call jungle music at the time. So sit back, relax, and enjoy East St. Louis Todolo, featuring the great Barbara Miley from the early Duke Ellington Band, recorded way back in 1927.
Bye.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to 52nd Street, Winnipeg's home of classic jazz, right here on 101.5 UMFM. We just heard from Duke Ellington as we move towards his 127th birthday. A random number, but just a chance for us to talk about and play the music at Duke Ellington. We just heard East St. Louis Tolo, featuring Barbara Miley. By the early 1930s, Ellington's band had become quite famous. In fact, it gained national fame by about 1931 with a string of records. But the band had formed some changes, including Miley being let go because of his alcoholism and being replaced by Cody Williams. In addition, two stalwarts who joined the band and shaped their sound for the next four decades joined. Johnny Hodges on the alto saxophone and Harry Carney on the baritone saxophone. And in the early 1930s, they started to really take off and develop. We're going to play two songs in a row now just because I don't want to talk too much. We're going to start with Mood Indigo, one of the great Ellington songs. It's recorded by a band called the Jungle Band way back in 1930. And then we're going to jump to 1932. So in 1930, we already have Harry Carney on the baritone sax, Cootie Williams on trumpet, and Johnny Hodges on the alto saxophone. And so the basis of that band is deeply formed. You are also going to hear a jump from that 1927 clackety kind of band into a much more sophisticated smooth band in 1930. And then in 1932, something even more significant happens. Ellington is signed exclusively to Brunswick, the Brunswick Record Company, in 1932, and stayed with them through 1934. And during this time, even though there was a drop in the number of sales, he had a series of hits, including It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing, Mood Indigo, Sophisticated Lady, In My Solitude, and In a Sentimental Mood. And we're going to hear two of those songs right now. Let's hear Mood Indigo from the Jungle Band, recorded way back in 1930, and It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing from 1932. Before I do, though, as you know, we are continuing to ask for your support, your generous and kind support, to support UMFM here. And if you choose to do so, please feel free to give us a call tonight. It's 204-474-6610. Again, 204-474-6610. And we'd be more than happy to walk you through the process of donation. Here now, Duke Ellington with Mood Indigo, right here on 52nd Street. Thank you.
what da do, da da do, da da do.
What do you think of that? Interesting, because you start to hear the sound. And what I'm trying to go for tonight is we talk about Pleasure Ram and talk about Duke Ellington and throw all these things together. Try to show you a little bit of the growth and development of Duke Ellington as an artist. And as it's hard, right? Because he's a great piano player. And it is so often overlooked. If you overlook his piano playing because of his orchestration and because of his arrangement and because of his composition, nobody blames you for that. That seems more than fair. So in the 1930s, a couple things happen. 1936, his contract ends, but the band becomes quite famous. In fact, they tour Europe in 1933, 1939. So it's the beginning of sort of the swing era and the export of a lot of great music from the U.S. to Europe, and jazz becoming an international kind of group. And Ellington really is at the forefront of it. He's relatively fortunate because he's able to travel, including through the segregated South, by way of private rail cars. And so many of his musicians didn't have to experience and have the same types of experiences that so many others did who traveled by bus and stayed in segregated hotels. In the late 1940s, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because there's so much that we could talk about. But in the late 1940s, something significant happens. Ellington ends his business relationship with Irving Mills. Irving Mills was somebody who was a publicist, a musical publicist, a promoter, etc. And he took credit for a lot of the early compositions of Ellington. And by taking credit also meant taking royalties. And so it was a very unfair business deal. It's a sort of a hotly debated issue because there's this idea that Ed Mills actually did help Ellington cross over into white audiences. But the reality is the business deal was poor at best, is how you describe it. Fraud is probably a better word. And so he gets rid of Irving Mills, and he finds in the late 1930s a collaborator who would stay with him until 1967, the time of his death, a young man from Pittsburgh named Billy Strayhorn. And it's said of the two of them that they thought in such a similar way that one could start a melody and the other could finish it. And they had a very close relationship until the time of Strayhorn's death in 1967. And so it's during this time that Ellington's band really transforms in some different ways. Number one, they become much more sophisticated harmonically. And number two is, not only do the arrangements become more complicated, the ability to have artists featured, and specific artists featured starts to change. And so Ellington really starts to use the orchestra as his muse. And that's something that he does until the day he dies, effectively, in 1974. So we're going to jump ahead to the early 1940s now. And it's a time of incredible prominence for Ellington. Not only is he on the hit parades and sort of there's hit after hit, It also comes to a time, as with Strayhorn in 1939, that is considered by many to be probably his best band. It's a band that includes Rex Stewart on cornet, Cootie Williams, we've heard about before, on trumpet, Lawrence Brown, Tricky Sam Nanton on trombone, Juan Teasel on valve trombone. I don't think we'll have time for it tonight, but he actually is the writer of Caravan. And it introduces two very important figures. We already have Johnny Hodges and Harry Carney. But Ben Webster, when he joins in 1940, really becomes the first star tenor saxophonist. And of course, every other orchestra had a star tenor saxophone player. Lester Young with Count Basie, the list goes on. And this is the first time that Ellington's band has a star tenor saxophone player in Ben Webster. And he uses him to great effect. But the other piece that happens in the early 1940s is an incredible young bass player joins the band, and his name is Jimmy Blanton, and he harmonically and rhythmically propels the band to an entirely different level. So we're going to jump ahead 10 years, and I don't want to skip the 1937 recording of Caravan. I feel bad about it, but here we go. And we're going to hear two songs. We're going to hear Coco, which I'll talk about in 1 second, and then we're going to hear Cottontail. And Cottontail is one of these songs that is a vehicle for Ben Webster. It's a showcase for him, and it's just an upbeat, ripping, kind of grinding tenor sign kind of sound. So it's also the first time when Webster joins, it increases the saxophone section to five. So it's a huge, huge sound. And in listening to Coco, what you're going to hear is a really sophisticated arrangement. And something that's really ahead of its time. You heard Ellington at the beginning of the show playing Money Jungle. And he does something in this called the chiacatura, which is where you play two notes together and then release one on the piano. He actually does it with his whole forearm, creating this musical tension. And so we're going to listen to Coco in just a second. Before I do, though, just a quick reminder, if you wanted to support our station to hear shows like this one, or if you want to call in and say, listen, I'll give you more money if you take him on the off the air, that's a possibility too. But you can call at 204-474-6610, or as the kids like to do these days, you can go online to umfm.com/donate. That's umfm.com/donate. And it's a very easy process, just takes a couple of seconds, and you can support this show and so many others. And I have to tell you, there are wonderful hosts on this station, people who are dedicated to the music and want to create understanding and knowledge and share that love and that passion with so many people. So if you're a music fan, if you're a spoken word fan, please help us support UMFM as a voice in our community and a local voice. Again, it's umfm.com/donate, or you can just go to the umfm.com page and click on Pledgerama, or you can call our Wiley volunteers, who I think are getting a little restless. You can probably hear them in the background. They're at 204-474-6610. Again, 204-474-6610. It's starting to get kind of nervous. They're looking at the chair. They may take it away from me. I may have to finish the show standing up. In the meantime, let's listen to a little more Duke Ellington. We're going to start off with Coco. This is a recording from 1940, the Blanton Webster years, and then Cottontail from 1940, one that I love. May 4th, 1940, featuring the great Ben Webster on the tenor saxophone right here on 52nd Street. Oh, what do you think of that? I love it. You know, I used to be able to play Cottontail and loved that solo. And it's interesting because the soli, which is the section where the saxophones play together, was actually written by Ben Webster as well. But you can hear that band just tight, and what a band. And of course, before that, Coco. Think about a song like that. Like, you think about Coco, and I sort of talked to you about it before I played it, and you hear what Ellington's doing in terms of the ascent and the descent on the piano, and that sort of that forearm piece. It's a hit. Like, it's on the hit parade, and it's so sophisticated musically, and you've got that harmony and those arrangements and the way everyone's coming together. It's absolutely incredible. So those are the highlights from the Webster, some of the highlights, some of the many highlights from the Webster Blanton years. I'm going to jump ahead a bit, but you know, I talked a little bit about Billy Strayhorn, and what I should tell you about the kind of person Duke Ellington was is this. Despite all of the songs that he wrote, the song that he made his theme song was Take the A-Train, which he didn't write. Billy Strayhorn wrote. And that's just his way of helping out a young composer at that time and giving him some royalties and just paying tribute to someone who he had an immense amount of respect for. Now, we're going to jump ahead just a couple of years. Duke Ellington, 1965, was actually nominated for a series of awards, and well, there's a number of them at that point, but most specifically the Pulitzer Prize in Music. However, for some reason, they didn't give it out in 1965. I don't know what the reason is, but they never did. He was 66 years old at the time, and he said jokingly, "Fate is being kind to me. Fate doesn't want me to become famous too young." But he actually did receive a special Pulitzer Prize after his death in way later in 1999, 25 years after his death. But Ellington was very deeply tied to what we would call the early civil rights movement, and very much concerned about the issues of segregation and the impact that it was having on African Americans. And so early in his career, he turned his compositions to one of the things that I think is probably one of the seminal moments of his career, and the Black, Brown, and Beige symphony that he wrote. I'll call it a symphony. It's called whatever the hell people call it nowadays. It's not really important. And this is something that, for him, I think, and he commented on it publicly later, was really about expressing his concern and his belief in what we would now call the civil rights movement. This is 20 years before the civil rights movement, as we know it, really started to emerge, but in his own way, creating a voice for African Americans. And so this is a story that told the history of African Americans, the place of slavery, the place of church in their history. And it debuts in Carnegie Hall on January 23rd of 1943, beginning actually an annual series of concerts at that venue for the next 4 years. And it was an incredibly elaborate work, and so it through these different movements emphasized the history of Black Americans. And it's something he did later on as well. He actually wrote a score in 1959 called for the film Anatomy of a Murder, for which he won an Oscar, and Paris Blues, another movie, 1961. Of course, he was the star of what they called shorts in those times, and recorded with a number of musicians later in his career. But this is and in fact, he actually did a liturgy in the 1960s as well, that was based on sort of the Christian church and those pieces. And if I had time, what I would love to play for you, because I play it every Christmas, is some of the work that he did around Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite and Peer Gynt, using classical themes and really scoring them in a different kind of way. So you could see the sophistication, you could see the growth, you could see his development as an artist. And we're going to play just one song. We only have time for one song tonight, but I think it's so important to hear this. It's from Black, Brown, and Beige, and the song is called Come Sunday. And I just think this is an incredibly, incredibly moving piece. So I hope you'll enjoy it. In the interim, of course, if you want to take a moment, 474-6610, again, 204-474-6610, or online at umfm.com/donate. We would be greatly appreciative of your support. Here now, Duke Ellington with Come Sunday. Thank you. Yeah, I have no words. Duke Ellington died in 1974 of complications of pneumonia and lung cancer. He left behind an incredible legacy of work and a long body of work that contributed not only to jazz, but to American music generally. In the 1940s, as big bands started to diminish and taxes were placed on dance halls and fuel costs and all of the things that drove big bands out of business happened, Ellington used the royalties from his songs to keep the band together. And he said, just so I could hear them play every night. In 1956, he had a revival in his career that saw an incredible amount of success to the 1960s, both with his band and as an independent person recording with people like John Coltrane, and as we started off the show with, Charles Mingus and Max Roach. And the song is now infamous, and the story is infamous. It's 1956, and it is the Newport Jazz Festival. Ellington and his band are being put on because they're liked, because a promoter, George Ween, loved the band. And the band is going through financial straits that are very, very difficult. They are losing money every year, and he's keeping them afloat. And this single concert, this single performance resurrected their career and made the last 18 years of his career not only profitable, but as he said, enjoyable. And it all starts with a tenor saxophone player named Paul Gonsalves. I'll tell you more in just a second, but just a quick reminder, 204-474-6610 if you want to call, or umfm.com/donate. 25, 50, 75, 101.5, 150, and $250 levels available, as well as the bonus draws. I didn't get into those. You can check them out on the website. There's Festival Express, the Golden Guest List, and all of the things that come with that, including some wonderful, they're actually fantastic, because you get passes to a ton of different music and music festivals. And there's actually this year, there's the Golden Guest List includes tickets with camping to the Winnipeg Folk Festival. So lots and lots of opportunity for you to win, lots and lots of opportunity for you to show off your swag, including some of the beautiful t-shirts, pins, buttons, and of course the coffee mugs, which I try to grab one of every year. Our goal is to raise $34,000 to continue to help this support the station and the young voices that continue to populate this station, not mine, but the young voices that make a difference in our local arts community. So thank you for those who have donated. An immense thanks. It's a sincere gratitude, because this is a station that does a lot of great work, and it's something that I've been a part of for many years, so I certainly appreciate it. For those that are thinking about it, $34,000 is an attainable goal, 204-474-6610 or umfm.com/donate. Thank you so much for those who have. Thank you for those who will. And thank you to all of you out there who have listened. Paul Gonsalves joins the band. He was actually a star in Tommy Dorsey's band and played with a number of big bands, and Ellington picks him up and loves his sound because he thinks it's different and unique. When Gonsalves goes on drinking binges, the way Ellington deals with him isn't to punish him, because Ellington had this very lax kind of approach to the band. It would be to make him take long solos. And so here we are in Newport, Rhode Island, and I think this act had kind of been worked up for a while. Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue were actually two different songs that were recorded in, I think, 1936. It could be 1933. Forgive me if I'm wrong. And what happens is Ellington takes them and puts them together, and he puts them together with a 56, I believe it is, no, sorry, it's 28 course interlude by Paul Gonsalves, which by the end of it has people literally up in the aisles and dancing. And so the story goes, Duke Ellington's career is resurrected. Let's listen to as much of that as we can as we end our show tonight in tribute to Duke Ellington's birthday and our plea for us for Pledgerama. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. Until next week, this is Jay saying take it easy. Don't forget to support your local jazz scene. Here now, Paul Gonsalves on an interlude between Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue. Duke Ellington, live at Newport, 1956. Have a great week.